So you're walking through Home Depot, and a guy walks by. He's mid-60s by the looks of him, wearing, say, Dockers. And you think, wait, do I know that guy? James Williamson is that guy. He's a successful tech executive. He's been working in Silicon Valley almost since it was first called that. But what he did before that in the 1970s is a very big deal. And it turns out that most people in his life, including his own children, had no clue. Judy Campbell has the story.
Jimmy Williamson is in his 30s, and he knows a lot more about his dad, James Williamson, than he did when he was a kid. Back then, growing up in a beautiful house in a leafy Silicon Valley suburb, his father would go off to work every morning, just like everyone else.
You know, my dad's an engineer working like a 9-to-5 type of shift, and my mom was mostly like a homemaker at that time. So it was, I guess, typical, just in a lot of ways.
His dad had hobbies.
Tennis and fishing that, you know, that we shared together. And you know, he goes on his walks and jogs, and you know, he's into golf.
Growing up, Jimmy had sort of a vague sense that his father used to be involved with music. Then one day, when he was about 13, he was listening to his favorite album, Nevermind by Nirvana, when his father poked his head in his door and had something to say.
You know, that's all right, but, you know, I was the one who kind of created all of this.
And what did you think?
I didn't really believe him, no, and I thought that he, you know, I thought that he was kind of joking, really.
No joke. I must keep walking cheetah with a hat full of napalm. Turns out, James Williamson was the guitarist in the iconic proto-punk band The Stooges in the 1970s. But most people around James Williamson had no idea about his past. Iggy and The Stooges, they were wild. Iggy Pop was all over the stage, writhing, diving, flailing. And I know at this point it's a little cliche to say that a punk rock band was wild, but Iggy invented that cliché. He was the first person to stage dive. He'd moon the crowd or flash them. Sometimes he was covered in peanut butter, sometimes in his own blood. James wasn't with the band from the beginning, but he knew them, and he was at their first gig in Detroit in 1968. James was a teenager. He'd already been kicked out of several schools, spent some time in juvie hall, and he was in a band. But he'd never seen or heard anything like this. Iggy was covered in silver paint, playing a vacuum cleaner. James says it was sort of horrible, but also totally exhilarating.
I mean, how exciting is the vacuum cleaner? But there was enough drug consumption at that place that it really didn't matter.
This all appealed to James. He'd mostly taught himself how to play guitar.
I learned early on that it was easier to write my own music than it was to copy other people's music.
So he had this guitar style that didn't sound like anyone else. Iggy liked it. And so after a couple of years, he invited him to join the band. It was fun and crazy and hard. So many drugs, total poverty, living like outlaws. And then a break. Iggy befriended David Bowie, a big fan, who helped him get signed to Columbia Records. Bowie and Iggy were going to London, and Iggy wanted James with him to make an album.
So here we are, these Midwest kind of bumpkin guys, never been out of the country before, you know, didn't know anything. But we were really sure of ourselves, you know.
So sure of themselves, they didn't bother taking the cues of the music industry backing them, which was enthralled at the time with glam. But they were staying raw. James sat in his London bedroom with an acoustic guitar and wrote all the songs for what became the album, Raw Power. The lyrics are Iggy's, and it's his band. But that sound, the purposeful distortion, the intensity, so many chords, so fast, a guitar brutal and technical, that's James. That's why Iggy brought him to London, to create a new sound. By then, David Bowie was hitting it big in the U.S. That kept the label guys distracted, and the Stooges were left alone to make this very unconventional album.
That's the only way we could have ever made that record, because it's just had no commercial appeal whatsoever.
To really get this, I'm going to play the number one song in the States that year. Got that difference? Here's another song from Raw Power.
Nothing sounded like this. Nothing.
My friend Kevin Jones is a music writer, and he says it can be hard now to get what a big deal Raw Power was, because so much music ended up sounding like this. He brings up that famous Brian Eno quote about the Velvet Underground's first album. Eno said, basically, that not many people bought the album, but everyone who did started a band.
Now, that's pretty cool, because that's definitely what Raw Power was. But unlike the Velvet Underground first album, like, everyone who started a band after hearing Raw Power, like, changed music history. We're talking The Clash, The Sex Pistols, The Damned, The Red Hot Chili Peppers, Nirvana.
Hear that, Jamie? Nirvana.
James invented the sound, and even the people that followed him really couldn't recreate it.
But at the time, it was new and weird. The world wasn't ready for the Stooges. Raw Power was a flop.
It plummeted like a rock.
Being ahead of your time sounds so cool in retrospect, but it was a big pain when it was happening. Their tour in the U.S. was a disaster. James called it a death march. The band's drug use was out of control, and Iggy was getting grosser on stage, vomiting, spitting on the audience, taking his pants off. In one show, Iggy got cut with glass, and he went with it. Blood gushed, covering him. He kept playing. And it got even worse, with fans hurling bottles and lit cigarettes at the stage. Finally, the band imploded. Iggy ended up on the streets, wrung out by his heroin habit, and he kept clawing his way back. He needed it, success or no. But James, not too long after the breakup, he put down his guitar. Let's jump to 1977. It's been about 3 years since the Stooges broke up, and James has been working in the music industry, in production, recording albums for bands he hated, mostly disco.
I think that's what led to my happening to be at an electronics store when I saw my first personal computer.
It was a revelation.
It was called the MSI 8080, and it had little switches on the front panel where you had to boot it up in binary, you know, to get anywhere with it.
At no time in our conversation about music, touring, writing Kurt Cobain's favorite all-time album, did James light up the way he did when he talked about seeing his first computer.
The personal computer was like exciting in a way that rock and roll had used to be for me.
By the next year, he was in college studying to be an engineer. This is a guy who went to 5 high schools. He had not done well in school. It was hard. But he loved it. He kept going, plugging away. And when he graduated in 1982, he moved to Silicon Valley for an engineering job. He got married, had 2 kids, and he became a huge success. Huge. He worked his way all the way up to vice president of technology standards at Sony Electronics, a major tech exec. And he kept mum about his former life. He'd moved on.
Music, to me, is like all-consuming. And so when I was stopped playing music, I had to just put it down. Otherwise, it was too hard for me to do both things.
So 3 decades go by without music. And then Iggy called.
He wants to know if I want to rejoin the band.
Join the band for a world tour of the old songs.
And I'm like, no. You know, because at that point, I mean, I'm fat, dumb, and happy. I don't really need the band.
But this was 2009. The economy had been tanking. Sony started offering early retirement to some of the older people in the company, including James. So his son Jamie says his dad held a family meeting.
You could tell he was nervous.
But he got back on the guitar and started practicing nonstop for 6 months.
good thing, because the first show was São Paulo, Brazil for 40,000 people, you know? It was like crazy.
So remarkably bigger than anything you had ever played in the day.
Oh, it was not even close. And so it was like I just stepped right into, you know, this like, you know, big time entertainment situation.
And he killed it. James's guitar sounded just like the old days, not just the notes, that energy, the excitement, the verge of insanity thrill.
You don't really lose that stuff. It just lays dormant.
I was like, okay, I get it. I get why these people are so excited. And like, I really like this music too. And I'm just like really thrilled that he's out there doing it. And I'm really proud of him.
So what does a guy in his mid-60s with a 3-decade break from music look like on stage? Well, pretty tame, really. I watched a video of one of his shows during their 5-year world tour. He's wearing a t-shirt and a black leather jacket, but it's one of those leather jackets that looks like a blazer, nothing like the vampire jumpsuit he used to wear. And he stands there and plays. Iggy is all over the stage, half naked, but James is laser focused on his guitar. Always the technician, be it guitar or computer.
Judy Campbell is co-host of KQED's podcast, The Leap, and you can hear a longer version of her story there. James Williamson is once again recording music. His most recent album is called Relicked.